Cheryl Benson, 707 Burnett Avenue in Ames, Iowa, with several friends in Nevada. Yeah, okay. And up until recently, a family member who lived all of her 103 years in Nevada. So fond memories of this community. As a citizen of this county, I appreciate what the applicant said earlier about their intentions with this application. I am a part of a family business, so appreciate the value of that. I am also, earlier in my life, married into a family farm that had both crops and hogs. So that's my context that I'm coming from. That being said, I really have some real serious concerns about this application. There are 44 questions, as we know. Only 16 were answered. So that's a lot of unanswered questions. My understanding from what I heard this morning is that there were points given for the intent to build a well. I have no reason to believe that it won't be built, but that's futuristic. We've had lots of comments about the flawed matrix, that it really is a pretty shaky document, legal, you know, compliant, but pretty shaky document for making a decision that's this huge for everybody involved. I don't know the applicants, so I have no reason to believe that there's any lack of integrity, that the operation that they're currently running isn't well done, professional, and that the intention to do what they have applied to do is well-intentioned. I just don't think that Mother Nature, with the wind, the air, with the odors, the whatever else is carried on the air, the water quality, I just don't think that however well-intentioned we are with this level of animals, hogs, can be mitigated. There's just some real huge considerations. So I'm asking each of you as commissioners to do what you know you can do. It's been pointed out by others to take a look at this application, not allow it to go forward in its present form, and that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next is Barbara Willock.
And actually, I emailed the supervisors, so I don't really have anything to add to that, which what anybody said other than...
Okay, and Barb, your emails will be included as it goes forward.
And my recommendation that you recommend to dial.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
All right, so Susan Franzen is next.
I've asked my statement.
Thank you, Susan. Next is Brenda Brink.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I'm Brenda Brink, 29514 U.S. Highway 69. I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to give you some statistics, and I'm going to ask some things. Well, the story is that we have our younger son that had a few asthma attacks, and I'm just curious in here if anybody deals with caretaking of people who have asthma, breathing problems of any sort. Well, when you're the parent of a 7-year-old and they have an asthma attack, then you're up every 2 hours giving them a breathing treatment, trying to keep them awake, trying to stay awake on a Friday. So imagine that. And just take a deep breath right now and think about that. It's easy for us who don't have asthma to take a deep breath. It's pretty basic, taking a deep breath. And that's what we need to do, is we need to protect our kids. There really is no one else to protect them. We need to do that. Well, they have done studies on rural children growing to school in Iowa in rural areas. And it was quite interesting. It's not just one study, it's two or more. And what they found is that when you look at the average asthma rate, which this was in 2006 and 2005, since then, I'm sure the asthma rate has gone up. I have heard that. I couldn't find that statistic. But they did a study. And if a child goes to a rural school within 10 miles of a concentrating hog operation, their risk of asthma almost doubles. Now, I didn't say it goes up like 50%. It almost doubles. That's not okay. If a child lives, well, I should say if a child goes to rural school within a half mile of a concentrated animal feeding, it's almost four times the rate. We're talking about asthma here. And the thing about asthma that I didn't realize until I had a child with asthma is the treatments are only treatments. They get you through, but the treatments have their own very severe side effects. One of them is steroids. You don't stay on steroids very long. It's not that good for you. The other medications, we thought, okay, great, here's some new medications. Well, guess what? The doctor says, well, we don't want to use these unless we have to because of the side effects. We don't need any more children with asthma. To me, this is the bottom line. If we can't protect our kids, what are we doing? What are we doing? And then, there's the antibiotics in the feed. And if you have a child who lives on the farm where antibiotics are in the feed for the hogs, it's 9 times the chance to have asthma. So something's wrong with the system. I grew up on a farm. We had hogs. My brother got out of it because he couldn't make any money when the whole system changed. And the one thing that I want to also give you is I'm a member of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. We have a bunch of petitions here. I hope that's ketchup. Sorry. And I think there's about 500 signatures on here.
And this is the information I just shared.
I don't really care about the legal part. You know why? It's a moral issue. When you can't protect your children, when we are purposely allowing things to be put in place that put our children at such risk for a life-altering condition. That's a moral issue. And it's time we took the moral ground and did the right thing. So that's what I'm asking the supervisors to do, is to recommend no on these applications. The other thing is, I think all of us need to think about how elections matter. I ran for state representative. I was all ready to go and work for the health of our communities. And one of those things that we need to do is strengthen the master matrix so we don't put the Board of Supervisors in this an intolerable situation, so we give local control back and we use science. We use science to determine things. Well, that didn't work out. So I want you to think about who's in the office now, and you need to put the pressure on them, because I myself have not been able to do that. But if enough people talk to our elected representatives, we can impress upon them what we want, and we need to do that. And the last thing is, I heard a couple weeks ago that Paul Willis, who runs Nyman Ranch and produces a very premium pork product, top dollar, is looking for partners. Think about it. Thank you.
Next, I have Pat Scholarbaum. Hi, Pat.
Yeah, thanks for the pronunciation of Scholarbaum. Pat's a lot simpler. Thank you for your time this afternoon. I will... there's a lot to say, and this is a pretty vast topic.
Oh, give us your address, Matt.
Oh, excuse me. It's 19775 600th Avenue, Milford Township, Nevada, Iowa.
I have a question. Were you over there as media too?
Yes.
That's what I thought. You would change a lot.
And my comments are going to be neutral and to the point of conservation.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to.
That's fine. Yeah. Well, with that, let's just start with the conservation pledge. I give my pledge as an American citizen to faithfully defend from waste the natural resources of my country. It's soil and minerals. It's forests, water, and wildlife. The Conservation Pledge was convened in 1902 by President Teddy Roosevelt. It was determined that the resources that seemed to be endless and going on forever, by 1902 they could see some failings in that. In Iowa, one of the species that was becoming more and more rare that was essentially wiped out of our interior waters were the river otters. By 1929, the last sighting was west of the Mississippi in Woodbury County. We have grown as an agricultural state. We have reached a precipice. We have a master matrix whose authors, and I will quote David Johnson, the independent senator from Oshkosh, who was one of the 12. There were 6 Republicans, 6 Democrats. They got together. They created the master matrix. He has vowed that it should be rendered obsolete and replaced. Now, that is a quote from David Johnson. So this is the legal matrix that we're working with. But I'm going to try to bring this back around to where we have a family, obviously with impeccable farming standards, and you're to be commended. You're buying into a system that is essentially the current system. I don't know where this is going, but I think when we have a situation where there's a hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico that is not diminishing, we have voluntary mechanisms, we have things that, and each year the hypoxic zone grows and it's growing larger. And the river otters that we brought from Louisiana and the Gulf of Mexico in 1985 through about 1992, by 2000, river otters had returned to the interior rivers of Iowa. Their genetic makeup was in the origin of the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, those critters are here now. They're back. They're essentially some of our ambassadors to link us to the Gulf of Mexico. There are family fishery people that have family businesses. They are struggling because of the loss in the shrimp industry, because their lifestyle is being negatively impacted by our lifestyle. We all want cheap pork. That's our system. I don't see how an Iowa farmer can go to the Gulf of Mexico and look those shrimp fishermen in the eye and say, sorry, buddy, our system trumps your system. They are providing protein for a hungry world the same as you. It's just a matter of, as Brenda Brink invoked, there's something moral going on here that we're all buying into, and it's not really, this is something that's beyond Iowa, and it's beyond Story County, and it's beyond the master matrix. We've got a system that is extracting the wealth of our planet and running it down the river. It's treating our water like dirt. It's treating our water like it doesn't, like, oh, it's too bad, I guess we'll just make more. I don't get it. I don't see how an agriculture industry in Iowa can impose a way of life on the shrimp fishermen in the Gulf of Mexico. I don't get it. But do as you must. I'm sure you will. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, I have Carolyn Rathbun's something.
I had to go to college and graduate school and law school before I ever figured out how to spell it. Other people just had to go to kindergarten for their name. My name is Carolyn Raffensperger, and I live at 3703 Woodland in Ames. And I am part of a family farm in North Dakota, and we raise cattle, have a pretty large cow-calf operation. When my husband was 65, he moved to take a job at Iowa State, and we still have our farm. And one of the key things about our farm is that he was very careful about the animal-to-land ratio, that there were only so many animals that our land could absorb. And we have 3,500 acres in North Dakota, or did at the time when we left. And we did not have a lot of, we had 100 cows, and so at some times we could have 300 animals on that very large farm, grazed them on prairie. But it was a really careful ratio between what the land could absorb and what was too much. And a definition of toxic is too much of something that could be a good thing. And it seems to me that 15,000 hogs on that very small area of land is just too many hogs. And, you know, when we aren't able as a government to actually make choices about what is not just legal, but what is just, what is moral, then we're asking what's the role of government. And I really believe and subscribe to the idea that your job as our government representatives is to take care of the things we share and to help us do what we cannot do together. We can't build a road. We can't do a whole lot of things. And I'm here speaking on behalf of future generations that I don't want Iowa to be the number 50th state forever in terms of the loss of natural areas, in water quality, in all of those things. And it seems to me the government's responsibility to take care of public health is paramount. Brenda Brink spoke eloquently about the problems with asthma. So what's in that air that we don't like? Around Thanksgiving, I couldn't hang my clothes out in Story in Ames in Story County. And we saw on the news, on Des Moines Register and on TV, that people in Des Moines couldn't breathe the air. It stunk. And it was offensive. So, well, you know, people don't like bad smells, and we sort of dismiss the fact that it doesn't smell good. But the fact of the matter is that smell is one of our key biological warning systems. And you don't like the smell of that hog manure, and I'm being kind, you don't like the smell of it. There's something that tells you it's wrong. You don't need a doctor to tell you that this stinks and that it's telling you something important biologically, that this is a problem. So what's in that air quality coming from a confined animal feeding operation? There are three things that you need to worry about. The first is the particulate matter. Our lungs are not made to inhale dust carrying all sorts of other things on it. Our lungs aren't made for that. So the first is the particulate matter. And when you get increases in particulate matter and you're breathing that, you get all sorts of public health issues. You get increased stress. You get increased cardiovascular problems. And these all have incremental and cumulative effects. The second thing that you need to worry about are the chemicals that are actually toxic coming out of these things. You smell some of them, and you don't smell some others. You do smell hydrogen sulfide. You do smell ammonia. These are toxic chemicals. We've had other confined animal feeding operations where the pigs themselves died from the hydrogen sulfide. We were not meant to breathe that. And it is a warning system that we ignore at our own peril. And you are putting children at risk if you decide to put those CAFOs within such a close distance of your schools, of your hospitals, of your vulnerable populations, the elderly, people with compromised immune systems, asthma, people with cardiovascular diseases, people who are having suppressed immune systems because of treatments for arthritis, things like that. And the third thing that you need to worry about is infectious agents. So we've heard quite a bit of testimony today about antibiotic resistance. So we know that confined animals of any species tend to get diseases, and the antibiotics are treating them, can't treat all the viruses and other things. So you need to worry about those infectious agents. You will not see the creeping public health issues. You will not see that child in the middle of the night that can't breathe. You will not see the increases in blood pressure from stress and then the cardiovascular problems from the particulate matter. You won't see that, but they're going to be there. And we don't want the kind of economic development that is developing the copays for all of the diseases that are going to be running rampant from the increase in hogs and their manure. And, you know, there's another species, Pat Schlarbaum spoke so eloquently about the otters. And I want to speak on behalf of pollinators. We know that stench actually interferes with pollinators who are pollinating. They are dependent on smell, to smell the flowers of the blooming trees. So anyone who has an orchard, anyone who is dependent on pollinators for food or even for the beauty of them, the stench of a CAFO interferes with pollination. And I want to close by saying one other thing. I live a mile and a half from Dakota Access's pipeline. And so in Story County, what we're doing is becoming a sacrifice zone in terms of our water quality. We're just going to cite every single noxious thing that can possibly come our way and just say, can't say no, can't say no. I started out by saying that your job is to be the steward of the commonwealth, of the roads, the bridges, the parks, the air, the wildlife that we all share. And my job is to register my consent or my dissent. And without my consent and without the consent of the governed, we do not have legitimate government. We do not have legitimate government. We either have anarchy or we have a dictatorship. And I believe that we stand together, this group that has sat here for hours and said, we do not give our consent to the poisoning of our land, our water, our pollinators, our otters, our future generations. Thank you.
Thank you, Carolyn. Next, I have Wendy Schneider.
Hi. Hi, my name is Wendy Schneider. Is this the big mic?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm at 62815 Prairie Winds Drive, and that is in Nevada Township. So I'm just south of Nevada, but near to Indian Creek and several of its tributaries. And I'm here for a couple of reasons. Like many others, I am concerned about water, but I'll spare you most of my remarks on water because I think they've been covered pretty thoroughly. I do want to mention one thing. We've been talking a lot about injection and hoping that an injection method will reduce runoff and therefore reduce water, the potential for water contamination. But every time we talk about injection, we also have to remember that during the winter, those restrictions on injection are lifted. They can be waived on an emergency basis. They can be waived for the winter time application. So every winter, even if we have a plan that calls for injection, there still will be spreading during the winter, and there still will be a significant threat of water contamination. The other reason, moving away from water, that I'm concerned about this application is because, like a couple other people in this audience, I've been here before. I was in Milford Township when a CAFO was proposed in Milford Township, and so I have a fair amount of experience with the application process and also how the DNR treats these. And based on my experience, I feel that there are a couple of mistakes that are being made in how this application is being weighed, and I wanted to talk about three of those. The first two relate to the scoring of the master matrix.
Can you hold the mic?
Sure. Good now? The first one I wanted to talk about is the scoring in a number of categories, but I probably most closely identify this with question four for distance from water sources. You get points if you have above the minimum separation distance from creeks and ditches with water and other somewhat transient sources of water. And the reason I have questions about the 30 points that were given to each of the applications in this category is if you look at the documentation attached to them, you will find a map. And that map, if you look carefully, has a date on it. And what's the date? The date is February 2008. Our maps, our water maps, have not been updated in 10 years. Almost 11 years at this point. And this is something that came up with the Milford Township. It came up, in fact, after it had gone through the Board of Supervisors. After the application had reached the DNR, we had an episode of heavy rainfall. And a number of people were concerned at that time and went out to the CAECO location and looked around and found that even though there wasn't a stream on the map that they were using in the application, there was all of a sudden a stream that was blocking access to the CAECO. And they took photos of it and they took videos of it and they sent it to the DNR and they said, hey, you know, we actually do have a water source problem here. And the DNR said, well, we can't look at evidence of actual flooding. We can only look at evidence that is shown on our map. And we said, but wait, your map is from February 2008. And anybody who's lived in Story County over the last 10 years knows that we've had a lot of flooding events since 2008. And we said, hey, wait, that doesn't seem fair, that you're basing this on an outdated map. And their response was, well, we realize that. It's a high priority at the DNR. We will have it done within a year or by 2016 at the latest. Here we are, 4 years later, you know, 4.5 years later, we still don't have those maps in Story County. And it's peculiar, right? Because I believe almost the entire state of Iowa has those maps. There are only 15 counties where the maps have not yet been outdated. Excuse me, have not yet been updated. So I believe that giving points for distance from water sources based on dramatically out-of-date maps is not justified. We really don't know exactly what's going on. And until we get those maps, we shouldn't be awarding those points. I think that, I mean, if I were sitting in your desk, I would say to the DNR, no more applications until you get us good maps. And at the very least, we're not going to award points in categories that are based on separation from water sources. And so if we look at that in this application, that's 30 points on each application. Another problem that I saw with the application, based on my experience, was also something that I think, is it Ethan? You discussed, it was this question of number 20, which obviously kind of bothered you guys as well. And number 20 is the issue of whether or not there's a history. And the reason that it probably bothered you is because this application is different. If you look at almost every CAECO application, it is a combined application that comes not only from the finisher, but also from the producer or the integrator, i.e. somebody like Nastroff's, somebody like Smithfield, somebody like Johnsonville. And so the inquiry there is not, has the individual finisher, who's oftentimes like the folks here setting up a CAECO for the first time, but rather has the producer had a history of violations. And that, for those of you who haven't looked at all the contract documents involved in these projects, the producer governs much of the day-to-day operation of a CAECO. The producer will specify the food, the schedule of care, the details of shipping, the details of medical care. So it makes sense. It's a logical inquiry when you're looking at history to look at the facilities that are run by the integrator. And we don't have that in that application. So I think it's an incomplete application. The analogy I would make is, let's say let's say you are applying to set up a daycare in your home, and you know that the fact that your son has a felony conviction and lives with you is going to be a problem, so you ask him to move out, and you submit the application. Nobody with a felony conviction in the house. You're good to go. But then you bring them back in. We wouldn't accept that in the context of a daycare. I don't know why we would accept it in a facility or three facilities of this size that have the potential to affect so many more people. So I think that those 30 points should not have been given because the application is incomplete. And I think that they could have been given if you had the identity of the producer, but you don't. And so because it's ambiguous, that should have gone to the DNR. The final mistake or sort of area that I'm uncomfortable with this application process is not the master matrix specifically, but the understanding of what the board's options are now. And I know that a lot of people in this room have sent emails. I've sent emails to the Board of Supervisors, and we've all expressed a number of concerns. And most of us have gotten back very nice, very polite emails that inform us that the board has no power here, that the board has no legal role to play in the decision to cite this CAFO. And maybe we should think about modernizing the laws. And I think that there is a core of truth to that. We all agree in this room that the DNR will have the final decision. I think some of us may be happy about that, and some of us may be upset about that, but we all agree that that the DNR is, in fact, the final decision maker. However, that does not end the inquiry into what the supervisor's powers are. And because I'm the sort of person who likes reading law materials, I decided I was going to go and read the statute just to sort this out in my own mind. And the statute, if you go to the statute, first we have some of the information that Ethan talked about. For example, the supervisors shall investigate, so look into the facts, and they shall score the application. But then there's another section which describes the options open to the supervisors at that point, and there are three of them. And I think it's worth drilling down just a little bit here, because the choices that the supervisors make at this point determine what the DNR can do. So your first choice, option A, or option one here, is that you can score the application in passing fashion, so you get your 440 points, and the supervisors can vote to recommend approval. Now, if they take option A, that does have some impact, because what it means is that the DNR then cannot go back in and rescore. So the DNR no longer has access to these controversies. They're considered settled. So if we had doubts about whether or not they should have taken points for the water, but we give them a passing score and we vote yes, then the DNR cannot go back in and investigate the scoring in the master matrix. Their inquiry is simply, does this meet the code? If it meets the code, it's passed. So by choosing to vote for approval, we are tying the DNR's hands. That's option one. Option two is taking the points away. If you have doubt, don't give the points. Now, that doesn't end the process of inquiry. I think a number of speakers have said, if you take the points away, it isn't an automatic fail. What it means is that it then goes to the DNR, and the DNR, which has more investigative capacities and more knowledge, then does their own investigation and rescoring. So that's what happens if we decide we're going to take the points away. The third option, which is also very clear in the statute, is that you can decide that the Henrys have earned the points, you'll be comfortable with that, but you can still vote to recommend denial. And you can vote to recommend denial based on what we're doing here, based on the comments in the room. Now, that may not stand up to the DNR's review, but that is absolutely one of the choices open to the supervisors. And I think that in this case, it's an apt choice, because what we have before us is a very unusual application. It's unusual in that, well, we have three at once. It's unusual in that they're so closely clustered together. And it's perhaps most unusual looking at what I see right there in that map in front of me, which is all of those manure application areas, which are right up abutting Nevada itself. So this is a lot of manure being spread in such a way as to impact many more people than are typically impacted by a CAFO application. And so this might be very well a perfect opportunity to use that third option and to say, we think they've made the points, but because of the siting, because of the proximity to so many people, we are going to recommend denial. And I would hope very much to see you guys come to that conclusion as well. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Next, I have Matt Morrison.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Board of Supervisors. My name is Matt Martis, and I am the City Administrator for the City of Nevada, Iowa. I have been asked by Mayor Barker and the Nevada City Council to come in front of you today and summarize what was at our public forum last night at the City of Nevada Council meeting. So what I have handed to you is a summary of 11 people that spoke at the council meeting last evening, and then in addition to that, with a summary of each of those that spoke. And then in addition to that, a packet of documentation from 18 people who had contacted the City of Nevada prior to the November 10th public meeting. Overall themes of those that spoke are exactly what we've heard here today. Air quality and water, future economic development in Nevada, concerns for future housing development in the north side. I'm not sure if that's one that's been discussed. A decrease in property tax valuations and home values, increased damage to roads in the area, concern of proximity to the wasteland applications near the City of Nevada, and concerns about monitoring the facility that plans are being followed under the authority of the Iowa DNR. In addition to that, I've been asked by Mayor Barker to read a statement. He was unable to be here today, so I will go ahead with his statement in the interest of time. Quoting from Mr. Mayor Barker, as a city has no governing authority over this process, it has been a challenge issuing for the city to address. Like the coal yard proposal of 10 years ago, I have concerns about any project that could limit future development in our city or impact property values or quality of life for our residents. Unfortunately, the master matrix system appears significantly limit the ability of local governments to have input in the process. The system is outdated and does not reflect modern agriculture, and it de-incentivizes farmers who work from local leaders collaboratively. And it does not give adequate time for communities to have the types of conversations these types of proposals would warrant. Additionally, there are members of our community passionately concerned about air and water quality, and unfortunately, we must trust our local farmers and the Iowa DNR to provide proper oversight, as city staff does not have the expertise or the authority to manage those concerns. The Henry family has valued members of the Nevada community for generations. However, I feel this process and the matrix systems does both the family and our community a disservice. End of the statement from Mr. Barker. I've been asked by the council to relay several of their concerns. Mr. Walker has addressed the concern of me with the property value and expansion of our housing market, which is in dire need of bringing or improving in the City of Nevada. So his concern is the housing market and the economic development impact that could have. You've heard from a couple of the, or at least one council member, and I'm not going to expand on anybody else. My professional thoughts are this. I look at it from a housing perspective. I do have concerns about limitations of future housing expansion within the city limits of Nevada. Having worked on a project already that has been drug on for almost the entire time I've been here for 2 years, it's disheartening that we're not making progress on that. So we're really limited as to the expansion of housing outside the city limits. So that is a concern of mine as a city administrator moving forward. Also, I'd have to be honest with you, the city budget is always a concern for a city administrator. We talk about the taxable valuations of home decline that we've heard about earlier. I've had numerous conversations with County Assessor Wayne Schwitzerath, and it is a concern of mine. I don't have extensive data for what I would call to this area, but those are the professional statements that I truly believe that will that could impact our community. If you have any questions, I'd be more than glad to answer those, but I appreciate your time and thank you for listening.
Thanks, Matt. Thank you, Matt. Next, I have John Klaus.
Hi, John. Mr. Chairman, members of the board. John Klaus from 2167 Ashmore Drive in Ames. I've got an interesting perspective up here. You're very impressive in your questioning. This is about an administrative rule of the Department of Natural Resources, and it's called the Master Matrix. And it came about through some vigorous rulemaking efforts when the legislature, with the aid of the Iowa Supreme Court, stripped the counties of any local governing authority with respect to confined feeding operations. And it was acclaimed as a way to provide the Board of Supervisors with a reasoned, evidence-based way to influence the outcome of these applications. Like any administrative rule, it's a work in progress. There's room for improvement. I think we've heard the room for improvement today. If the board fails to or decides not to recommend approval of this application and requests a hearing, the matter will go before the Environmental Protection Commission at one of its regular meetings, I believe within 30 days. And it will be an opportunity for continued principled articulation of ways to improve the master matrix. I personally at this moment think it would be improved greatly if, one, the passing score was raised from 50 to maybe 60 or 70%. I also think there's a room for something called a demerit, and there's something happening that doesn't not only does not warrant any positive points, but actually should require some special effort to overcome the demerit, something to counter maybe a plan that runs afoul of the city's or the county's carefully engineered comprehensive plan. And finally, I think that when the Board of Supervisors exercising its scrutiny and conducting hearings like this comes to the reasoned conclusion that this project should not go forward, at least as it's been presented, then I think that should be the ruling on the field. And the applicant then has the obligation of coming forward with very clear and convincing evidence that it's not the right ruling. So that's what I have to say. I'd like you to deny this permit today so you get an opportunity for hearing. Maybe we can parlay that hearing before the Environmental Protection into something akin to agreement, and we can take that to the Administrative Rules Coordinator in the Governor's Office, who might choose then to recommend to the Department of Natural Resources that they review this rule and give us some further consideration. And finally, the Board of Supervisors, like any citizen, does have the ability to petition for rulemaking and rule revisions under the Administrative Procedures Act. It would not be, in my mind, an inappropriate expenditure of funds by the county to pursue rulemaking activities that might work to improve this process, to make it better, maybe encourage other counties to join in that effort. So thank you very much.
John, thank you. Thank you, John. Next, I have Ted Grassinski.
Wish I would have stopped at Casey's for a donut. So, hello, everyone. My name is Ted Grassinski. I was recently elected Story County Treasurer. I want to start today by thanking everybody for keeping the discussion very civil, very to the point, and providing a lot of great information. I want to thank the supervisors for allowing us this opportunity. 71751 US Highway 30, Colo, Iowa. That address is important to me. Our family has been on that address for about 146 years, going close to 150 years. I'm the sixth generation to live and work on that farm. My daughter is the seventh generation to live in the farmhouse that we live in on that farm. We've been in this county quite a while. That's my mom's family. My dad's family lives north of Fernald, about 2 miles from the Richland 10 site. We've only been there about 100 years. So we've had a lot of time and commitment in that neighborhood. I grew up on a farm, so I have a lot of conflicting opinions and feelings on this situation. I also live very near to the confined cattle operation on Highway 30 with the Upchurch family. Farming is what Iowans do. It's what Iowans have done for hundreds of years, and it's what many Iowans will continue to do. So this is an issue that is always going to affect that rural city divide. But this is also an issue that affects the rural situation. We are one of many families that have been up north of Fernald for well over 100 years. Depending upon how you want to divide us up, I have a family here that would be second cousins, third cousins that live in that same area. And many families in our neighborhood have been there for well over 100 years. There's a lot of Century Farms there. We've also farmed next to with the Henrys for years. We've cooperated with them on seed corn and on many things. They've been good neighbors for all intents and purposes through that time. The one point that my wife brought up to me was the best neighbor and the greatest farmer in the world can't make poop not stink. So that is obviously everybody's first concern. I won't go into the water and air quality concerns that many other people have done. I think we've had a great opportunity to hear those scientific facts. The one concern I have about the transparency of this operation is that Mr. Henry earlier said he talked to many neighbors within the mile zone. That mile zone must have been very tight mile, because I have friends and family who live in what I would call within a mile that never received any type of notification or consideration or approach about this situation. They were given notice about 2 to 3 weeks after it had already been submitted and just before it hit the papers. Many of them weren't even given notice before it hit the papers. That concerns me greatly. The impact of 5,000 hogs is pretty massive. Somebody said earlier that they'd grown up on a farm early, years ago next to a cattle and hog operation. 40 head of cattle and 60 hogs in a small building does not equal 5,000 hogs in a very small confined space. So I would have liked to have seen the Henrys reach out to some of those neighbors who have been in that neighborhood for 150 years. Talk to them. Get a little bit of input. Many of them are farmers. Many of them feel like a farmer should be allowed to farm however they want. It wouldn't have hurt, though, for relations, for them to have reached out a little more quickly and a little more open, rather than wait until the final step right before this goes to the Board of Supervisors to do their outreach. My wife has been pushing us to move to Ames for years, and she had recently come to the conclusion that maybe living out in the country was nice. Living near the farm would be great. We have a farm directly kitty corner from the Richland 10 operation that we had looked at for building a house. That is obviously out of consideration now. But we've also considered building out closer to my mom and dad's farm, which is about a mile and three quarters away. I'm discouraged, though, as my cousin, Andrea, who unfortunately, due to the length of today's meetings, wasn't able to speak, recently went through a lengthy process with the Board of Supervisors for her and her husband to build a house on the farming operation there 1 mile away. And even though Nat had farmed for I think upwards of 10 years with Andrea's father, Jim, it took multiple trips to the board and multiple trips to zoning to get their 6 acres zoned so that they could build a brand new house out there. And they will now be that close to the operation. Knowing the time and effort it took them to do that, it is very discouraging knowing that that's what we would have to do as well to live that close to a confined hog operation. So that's really my concern with the housing up there. But one of the other things, I'm just going to address some of the things that the Henrys have said. This is a goal for them to get into farming. We farm about 1,000 acres. My dad has farmed that for years and had a lot of success farming that. I know they farm much more land than that. I know that they employ a fairly large staff, and they've been very successful farming. My concern is a jump from zero livestock operation to 15,000 hogs in a matter of months seems a little massive. It also seems a little vague when they say we're going to manage the facilities. I would like a little more explanation of what manage the facilities means. And I do want to reiterate, because somebody said this quite quietly, I don't know that everybody could hear, they want to do what is right, but will their partners in the hog operation pay them enough to do what is right? So that is kind of my final concern as a private citizen. As a recently elected Story County official, I will take office in a couple of weeks. My major concern is with the quality of life in Story County. We've never really had that many CAFOs in Story County compared to other counties. I think that provides an immense quality of life improvement over some of our neighboring counties. I have a lot of concerns that once we start bringing these units in and operations in, they will multiply quickly. I think the county should look at each one individually, but also look at what we can do and what will impact the community. Rick ran on a growth platform. Marty mentioned multiple times how he was one of the few elected officials with Stacy Herridge east of I-35. I can remember, many of you probably can too, when Nevada was named the 26th best small town in America. It went on the sign. It was taking a lot of pride. Things like that are going to be tough to achieve if we have this type of operation so close when we look up at that map, that manure area so close to the city. I also think that we have done a good job growing economically. We have people drive into the county every day for jobs. With this type of operation that close to the north side of Nevada, there are major concerns about where we're going to put in housing for these types of things. So the last thing I'll say is, this is something my wife, who can be much more succinct than I often tend to drone on, but my wife mentioned that, Story County always gets a bad rap as everything going towards Ames, towards the west side of the county. Everything good happens over there. It's very much a divide between the areas. She pointed out, as she was also unable to attend as she watched a video today, today is a perfect dichotomy of where Ames and Gilbert get $800,000 homes and Nevada and the east side of the county get 15,000 hogs. That is a very dispiriting thing, because I know that she won't be the only one that comes to that conclusion. I want to see the county government work for the whole county. I want it to work for every member of the county, and I want to be able to see it grow in smart ways. I don't want to tell farmers how to farm. I just want the board to consider every possible impact this could have on the growth of the county. Thank you, guys.
Next, I have Mary Sand. Thank you, Mary. Next, I have Connie Trumbull.
Connie had to leave early, but she wanted to say that she would echo what Brenda Brinkett said.
Okay, thank you. Next is Jamie and Charlie Carthrew. Good afternoon.
Hi. For Jamie and Charlie Carsrud, we live at 2328 11th Street on the northeast corner of Nevada.
Jamie, yeah, just a little closer to my.
A little closer, okay. I don't talk very well. Sorry. Okay, we live on the northeast corner of Nevada. Oh, okay.
Some voices.
Yeah, I got one. I should let you talk. Our family will be directly affected by both the CAFO locations and the application site, one of which will only be feet away from our house. We have written and submitted our letters of opposition to the board and others, so we're not going to talk about the issues we've already addressed, like air quality, health concerns, water quality, drainage district 17 to Harrington Park, and decreased property value. But we are going to talk a minute about our family. We've lived in the Nevada area our whole lives and decided to raise our family here for many reasons. We built a home a few years ago within Nevada city limits, coincidentally, to get away from another hog confinement. We have two teenage sons and have always taught them the importance of making good choices. We tell them that they will be faced with difficult situations every day, and to remember to think through each decision they make because it could affect them later down the road. What the last few weeks have reminded us is that we also need to teach them how sometimes the decisions of others can also have very real impacts on your life. So we are here today to show our sons that if that does happen, you have to stand up for yourself, speak up for what is right, and do everything you can, no matter what the outcome may be. That being said, the proposed CAFOs are not a good choice for the community of Nevada, and we hope that those who can will stand up for us as we will for our family. Thank you.
Next is Rich Baum. Go ahead, Mitch. Okay. Next is Gene Watts.
I'm Gene Watts. I live at 1708 7th Street in Nevada. I'm here because I'm a mother with two small children. They attend the elementary school here. My son has lung disease, which we struggle to keep him out of the hospital anytime he is sick. I am concerned about the air quality here. We moved here almost 5 years ago from Illinois, also a very heavy agricultural state. We're not against farmers. We're not against agriculture. I'm concerned about the factory farm impacting our children, especially with the manure applications. These fields drain into Harrington Park, which is where a lot of the children have soccer practice. And anytime there are big rains, that park floods, and that manure water will just sit there. And across the street is the middle school. I just want to know, is it going to be the city of Nevada who will be paying for the cleanup of this if the kids start getting sick because of the bacteria load in that water that children go and play in a park? I think my children and the children of my friends should be able to play outside without worrying about getting grossly sick. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Joe Ripito.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Rick.
My name's Joe Ripito. I live at 1317 Kenyon Circle in Ames. I have to tell you, I'm even more alarmed about air quality and water quality than when I came in this morning, but that's not what I wanted to talk to you about. It's been covered. This is the first time that I felt it was important enough to come address the supervisors in about 3 years now, and I want to tell you a brief story about my last visit here, and you'll see why it ties in. I came 3 years ago as a skeptic of the Ames annexation to the east to build the industrial park with all that entailed and whether or not it was needed. And I wasn't alone in that. There were other skeptics. Is it needed? Can we afford it? Is it well thought out? What about the air quality of industry? And we went through all those questions, and I can remember the response. And Rick, you were here with two other people who are no longer supervisors. And the response I got was pretty much this. Ames has its plans. It has a good staff. It wouldn't propose this if it didn't know what it was doing. Who are we as county officials, even though we have the right to restrict this, even though we have the right to slow it up, constrain it, who are we as county officials to question their judgment? And I got to thinking about that as I've heard about Nevada's plans. They want to have some northern housing. They have a good staff. I'm sure they know what they're doing. And if these operations go through that close to the city, it's like putting a big wall around the northern part of the city. And you all know annexation law as well as I do, probably better. When cities want to annex territory, they cannot leave behind an island. Okay? They cannot leave behind property that is surrounded by city limits. So in terms of how you would go around hog lots and grow, it's just out of the question, and we know it is. And I can't really understand how, when we're talking about the possibility of permanent housing for Story County residents that want to be in the city limits of Nevada, this is permanent residents, permanent families, as opposed to hogs with only a 5-month lifespan. This doesn't make really good sense to me as a trade-off. And I just want to close, and I really hadn't thought about this until Mr. Rasmussen made his statement. But we do want to make sure that every city and entity in the county gets treated equally. And I thought the county, when I was here that time 3 years ago, showed incredible deference to Ames, a willingness to bend over backwards. And it seems like Nevada, given the concerns that it's raised, deserves that same kind of deference to the extent you can possibly give it in this case. So I would urge you to deny this. Thank you.
Next is Ron Heumann. Next is Cindy Hildebrand.
My concerns have been addressed, and especially by the mayor of the mayor.
Super. Thank you, Cindy. Next is Martha Ann Atkins.
My name is Martha Ann Atkins, and I live at 1317 Kenyon Circle in Ames, Iowa. And I'm going to say right away that I do agree with the last speaker, but that's not just because he's my husband. There's three things that I wanted to say to you today. One, obviously, I implore you to put a hold on this and to go through the process that has been discussed of how you can stop and say no now and make adjustments and maybe come up with something better. But I want you to try. That's the first thing I want you to do. And I want you to say no. The second thing I want you to do is when you have this pause, which I hope you can get, I want you to get somebody on your staff or yourself to explore what has been happening in North Carolina. I have relatives in North Carolina, and the first thing that's happened is they have put some constraints down there on hog operations, and they're not happy with them down there, at least the ones that I have spoken with. They must have done something right to get some of that stopped down there. So I want you to find out what they've done. And these are some things that we maybe could explore. Also, my cousin, who lives in Wilmington, I've talked to him recently. Now, his house survived. That was wonderful, that there were floodwaters all around him. But the truth is that he doesn't know where he can continue to live down there. He's as old as I am, and he's concerned as an elderly person about the health problem that he has down there. The water, you're not hearing it much on the news. The water in most of North Carolina is filthy. And what happened is those hog confinement containment tanks, they like to call them lagoons, which is not like any lagoon I ever knew. But these lagoon to me is in the Caribbean or something. But they talk about those hog, and they're made of cement cracks, and they have gone into the groundwater with all the toxic stuff that's in those lagoons. But what happened when they flooded down there, the water came in from the hurricane, and we're not going to have a hurricane here, but we do have floods in Iowa, big ones. And the water came in, and it rained so much, and the lagoons were full, they overflowed. And they went in the rivers, they went in the streams, they went in the gutters, they went everywhere. And he says it stinks when it starts to dry out because it is manure, and manure stinks, and it has all of these terrible health problems. And what he's afraid of, he won't drink the water down there anymore, he only will buy watered water, but his wife won't cook with it either. And in the spring, when they start having vegetable crops, fruit crops for immediate human consumption, he's worried about eating that food that is being watered with that filthy infected water. So we need to find out if that's really happening, if that's, we've got an example in North Carolina, and we need to use that example and use that information and find out if that would happen to us. I happen to think it would, but I don't have the evidence. And there's another reason that a lot of those hog producers are coming to Iowa. People don't want them in North Carolina anymore, so they're coming up here. So why should we take North Carolina's problems up here? It doesn't make sense. If it's not good down there, it's probably not going to be good for us as a state here. So those are the two things I want you to do right away. And in the longer range vision, I am very concerned about our cavalier attitude with Iowa soil. This is some of the best land for food growing in the whole world. And not only are we covering it over with cement and houses, and I understand all that, but we're not taking care of our land. a lot of you are as old as I am, and so you remember who Will Rogers was. And he said, we're not making any more land, so we better take care of it. So he's right. Will Rogers has been gone a long time, but he was absolutely right. We cannot be cavalier about how we husband our land. And we are. We think it's always going to be there. The air is always going to be there. The water is always going to be there. It is, but not unless we take care of it. And we have to take care of it. We have to think about what's happening to the land we live on. This is wonderful land. And that is the long-range thing as supervisors of this particular set of land called Story County. I want you to take care of it and think more about every decision that you're making. And I thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. Next, I have Nancy Rasmussen. Nancy, you have to go. Okay. And next, I have Margaret James representing Margaret James.
Yes. Margaret James, 2028 Riley Road, Ames, Iowa. Some of you might recognize me as being the sanitarian or department head for environmental health. What I'm hearing is antibiotics, hormones, toxins, flies, water quality, air quality, flooding, property values, density, animal welfare, and community development. All of those things are not reflected in that master matrix, not one thing. I am speaking today as myself because as the sanitarian, I have to keep my opinions to myself. I have to take neutral ground, and I do a very good job at it. I've convinced most of you that I am the devil from the previous go-round. I'm not the devil. All of those things that I listed are not public health, and they are not environmental health. They are not. And those are the things that I am trained in. Today's meeting has been very long, especially for the folks without a chair. Very, very long. And I apologize for that. But today was good in that we could compare the process for housing development and the process for an animal confinement. The process is laughable. The differences in the process is laughable. I mean, little flowers are getting more consideration than the people living in Nevada. I think that's totally wrong, okay? Now, as far as changing the score in that, I mean, that would keep this process alive. In my opinion, it's very easy to score these things. It's an exercise in checking boxes for the most part. Okay? There's not a lot of hoops and things that they have to go through. If you lived, in a karst topography or somewhere where it's a lot more difficult to get the spacing, then the master matrix might work. But around here, just about anybody could put in a confinement with enough work. So I don't think changing the score at this point is really an option. I think that all of those things pass, flying colors. I think that the Board of Supervisors need to vote to deny the approval of the application. And in that way, the process doesn't die for these three CAFOs. If you send up a passing score and a passing recommendation, it's going in, period. Period. It's going in. If you send a passing score, but denial based on comments, then it's still alive, and we could get more discussion and more attention from our legislators to know that this is not working. These comments, there's no way they show up on the master matrix, and it's just not fair. I don't think we have the science to support these things going in, and I think that we need to really put the brakes on. Thank you.
So I've been careful. Not to comment to bring this out from people talking, but let me just say this about Margaret. plan. So what you guys have seen today and in the past, if you're paying attention, is somebody who cares so deeply and so passionately about the environment. And we, by virtue of the necessity of conducting business, we put her in a position where she's got to set aside her personal beliefs in order to objectively, this has been really hard on her. Martin and I had a long conversation yesterday about maintaining objectivity in her professional role. And what we talked about this morning is if you've got to speak, you just got to do it as Margaret Jane's citizen, not as Margaret Jane's environmental coordinator. I hope everybody here appreciates the really tough emotional position that Margaret's put in through all this. And by and large, she does a great job separating the two and working through it. So, next, closer to the end of people who have requested to talk. Next is Jennifer Knox. Jennifer's still here.
I believe she's going to get her in.
Okay. And next is Karen Stein.
Karen, I don't know if everyone's realized this, but we are getting close to that.
Oh, we realized.
3:30 pickup. thankfully, my mother is picking up my slack. Karen Stein had to pick up her children from school, but she left me her statement here. She's Ames, Iowa. I do not know her address. I
don't. 2503 Ridge.
That sounds, yeah. Karen is an architect, and she's concerned particularly about the proximity to the community, the toxins in the air quality forced on the children, elderly, pregnant women, and anyone with breathing challenges or illness. As an architect, I do question the lack of plans, actual drawings, and showing the proximity of the confinement and the fields where the manure will be disposed. So the questions she has here are, what is the actual physical plan of the confinement and the closest residential area? What is the emergency plan and backup plan or plan B when something does inevitably occur? What is Nevada's comprehensive master plan for Nevada, and what is the impact? Can't read this other question. Why not collect the hogs' waste in a collection tank like the one at the ISU dairy farm? It seems to work great in cases of emergencies and floods, and the waste is then converted to fuel. Where are the comments and recommendations from medical professionals, pediatricians, allergists, and oncologists? What are the recommendations from the School of Vet Med or ISU specifically concerning swine fever and disease outbreaks? Lastly, she said, her kids and I have been unable to swim in our local rivers and beaches due to the high toxins. It's been 3 years now that she's been trying to take her children swimming in Story County, and every day that they've attempted, she's checked, and the DNR has advised against it. So surely 15,000 hogs won't help that situation either. Finally, she says, Ethan, the lawyer, said no history, no points should be awarded. There is medical history. Some children and adults have gotten sicker. Also, we have not asked our medical professionals, so please do not ignore them. She asks that you recommend that this does not pass, and that we do not incur a health issue or crisis as an outcome of that.
Thank you, Karen.
And I have a petition if anyone would like to sign it.
And next is Ryan Melton.
Ryan also has to be here.
Okay. That's everybody who signed up. Now is the chance if anybody didn't sign up and would like to make a comment. Yes, sir. Come right up. Start by introducing yourself.
Hi. My name is Bill Holstein. I live in Nevada, 1330 H Avenue. I apologize. I didn't intend to speak. I didn't organize my thoughts, but I would say that I grew up on a farm in western Illinois. We farrowed hogs in the field. We finished hogs in the field. That's not a better system, but that's the way we did it at that time. 20 years ago, the They were working on the matrix, and they were trying to establish at least minimum standards. We probably can expand and do some more things on the matrix at this point in time, but that's a political process. And I would say in my lifetime, technology is unbelievable. Several years ago, I heard that for every acre, we can get more than five times as many pounds of pork as we could back then. And, of course, we've more than doubled corn yields, but we have also, with the animals, changed the breeding and rations and things, and the technology is wonderful. And I think that when the matrix, shortly before the matrix was coming in, the DNR came down hard and said, you have to have a formed structure to put manure in to protect the water quality. And North Carolina's got a lot of sandy soils, and they have issues with water quality. Iowa doesn't have that problem, but what we ended up with was a septic that stunk like heck because we didn't have a chance for the sun or the wind to help cleanse that. And so we've got a lot better water quality for a number of reasons than we had 50 or 100 years ago. We've got better air quality than we had 50 or 100 years ago. And within the past year, I've seen some of the new advances they're making to help with odors, air quality, around hog confinements, and I really believe in this technology. So I would say that the careful application of technology by high-quality people like the Henrys is going to continue to move things forward, and I think that whatever I say here isn't going to change what happens on this matrix, but I believe in technology, and I think things can go forward, and I hope that they can be part of it here. I wish we could wave a wand and retrofit some buildings from the last 5 years, but we can't. So thank you for the moment.
Bill, thank you very much. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
T.J. Kokenauer, 29281 650th Avenue, Maxwell, Iowa. I've known Henrys for a while. They were customers of mine when I was at Vanwell Equipment. Based off of what Bill said on technology, these guys have always put their foremost passion in farming. These guys have always been at the forefront of stuff, and they've always been there, you know, to promote agriculture. And based on what they're saying today, I have full confidence and full respect that all of their efforts will be for the better of themselves and the community. These guys are going to be top-notch at farming. They're going to be top-notch at hog production. I grew up in a family farm, still family farm with my dad. When I look at these guys, it's the same thing I'm stepping through. What's the next step from row crop? Well, how can we maintain that family farm mentality? And I see it in these guys every day, and we deal with it every day. I mean, we're struggling out in the country, and this is the next step is livestock production. It's been here for a long time, and everybody loves pork. Pulling into town this morning, you know, I didn't smell a hog confinement. I smelled Nevada. So if we're going to start pointing fingers at livestock production, we need to look at what we're doing too. So that's my 2 cents worth, and I strongly suggest you push forward with this. So thank you.
Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Ryan Sampson, 15679 600 Avenue, Nevada, but actually I'm closer to Roland. Know some of you people. Grew up on a farm. I farmed my whole life. My grandpa farmed. My great-great-grandpa homesteaded farms, lost it in the Depression. I want to try to address some of the concerns that I've heard from people. Like I said, I feed livestock, I feed cattle, I raise cattle, I deal with the front end and the back end. The back end stinks, I like the front end, I like the middle the best. That's what we raise. I raise two kids, a daughter and a son. My son wants to come back and farm. I feed more cattle than my dad fed. I feed more cattle than his dad fed. It's increased through the years. Our ability to do more with the equipment that we have, with the technologies that we have, I've always thought that's improvement. My son and daughter, my daughter would come back. Her husband has too good a job. They've got two daughters. They come to the farm. I never feel like I'm putting those kids in danger in feeding livestock. You know, I feel like I've never been called immoral before, except that one time with my wife, but we won't talk about that. But I don't know what I'm doing that's so immoral and damaging to my grandkids. I can't wait. I've got some nieces and nephews that come out to my farm, and I've never, ever felt like I'm damaging them. But I feed more livestock than a lot of my neighbors or anybody else. I guess, I don't know. It's the modern day of agriculture, and I've never thought that's bad. It seems like agriculture is the only place that doesn't get to embrace technology and different things that every other aspect in our lives get to do. We all got cell phones. You know, we're all doing that. I think the cell phone is probably going to do more damage to our youngsters than the farm is. And I guess I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Anybody else? Yes, sir. Come up.
Good afternoon. Craig McEnany, 65622 210th Street, Nevada. And I'm right across from one of those fields. And I don't have a problem with it. 45 years as an ag educator, I've had to work with a number of young people like this, and you're saying, what do you have to do to move to the next level? I'm going to say thank you to all those that presented the opposite side, your concerns, they need to be heard. I'm going to say to Scott and to Eric and to the Henry family, you put your necks out of line when you come up here. It's not easy. I know the supervisors have a difficult task. I've worked on both sides of this issue. I said to somebody this morning, if I could have brought the 75 students I had last year at DMAC in my farm management class, the ones that are trying to talk to me, go back home to farm, and Brian, you know what I'm talking about. This is difficult. But there's a process that has to be gone through we have to figure out. I challenge the supervisors to do what you need to do. I challenge everybody else that's sitting out here, if you think there's things that need to be fixed, let's figure out a way to fix those by making the right types of decisions. Science is important. You know, when I talk about this was Scott about this. I'm concerned about how the manure is applied, but I taught soils. So I always think about cation exchange capacity. How's it going to get attached in the soils? So it's really important, I think, that we look, if we're going to use science, we look at science from all angles and that we make the right types of decisions. That's all I've got to say. I told Scott that I would not take a pro or con position because I spent 45 years trying to get young people to go back home to farm because I did not get to. Because of a farm crisis. And the farms disappeared. And we need young people out there.
Okay. Anybody else? All right. Seeing no one moving the microphone, we will close the public hearing. And board, now it is our time. The process that we're going to use, so we're going to start with whatever comments you guys want to make. And then we're going to go to each application one at a time and talk through the points and then talk through our recommendation. But let's start with any comments. So I promise all of you, and let me say this to everybody who's here and has been here, now that's exactly the way it's supposed to go. It's painful. It takes too long. But we in Story County have believed for years, long before the three of us were together, long before I was up here, and I've been up here the longest, believed that our responsibility was to gather feedback and go through the process of gathering feedback. And it's no fun at all for the Henrys, for sure. But it's part of the process for us to get through. So with that, I'll turn, of course, I'll start with you. Comments from anything we've heard, or do you want to hold those for when we get to each one?
No, I'll make most of my comments. I was born in Iowa, in North Iowa. I was a townie. I uncles who farmed for kids. But, you know, I spent a little bit of time with my cousins on the farms. I eat meat. I eat pork. Okay. I'm also an animal activist, which some people find, how do I resolve that? And sometimes it's tough. Okay. I care about water quality. I care about the air. I care about the land. I have a mother who has asthma. I mean, I could just go on and on and on. I think we all can connect with what the stories were today. So as I thought about this, about where do I want to be as far as explaining why I'm going to sound a little hypocritical here with having been from all that and eating meat, et cetera. And I thought about my role as a supervisor. And I thought about what the Board of Supervisors have done in the last few years to initiate study of our watersheds. Actually, that's been us. It's been pretty recent. It's been, we just approved our third version of a strategic plan that tries to balance agriculture with growth needs. I thought about the comprehensive cornerstone plan. And I thought about some of the restoration work going on at Hickory Grove, et cetera. So I thought a lot about this. And in each one of those, either previous board of supervisors or we up here spent your money. The majority, we spent your money. And I think that until there's work on the master matrix, until maybe after the first of the year, a new board discusses possibility, how they might want to weigh in down at the state, I'm going to vote to deny based upon not the Henrys, because I'm really impressed, and not upon the other people who are here in the room who opened up and shared with me some of their confinement operations, etc. But I'm going to vote to deny because how can we put so many hundreds of thousands of dollars between what we spent on consultants and what our staff time cost, etc., to keep moving forward on planning in the county when we can be set askew by a local family coming in and wanting to wanting to raise 15,000 hogs times two. And if I understand the manure calculations correctly, it's 4 million gallons per site. And if that's IP stats, then no, that's not right. So I'm going to vote to deny because of that.
Okay. Anything else?
Nothing.
Thank you, Loris. Marty.
Well, this is my hometown. I look out and see a lot of people I know live here. This is a lot of them. My heart goes out in the sense that I'm looking at the map. You see me picking this up from time to time. It shows where the manure management plans are right across my mailbox at one, and I have others scattered around me. Spent a lot of time being on the school board, handing out a lot of diplomas here in town. We wish kids well, sent them on their way. It's the number one with Iowa State that came cyclones. Now, in my mind, this has been rattling around in the sense I share with you, but we encourage our kids to attend Iowa State, premier land-grant college in the United States. Some of them go into the College of Ag, and some of them come out with degrees in animal science, whatever shape or form. I don't understand why it's a champion thing to attain that on the west side of the county, but if you come back to this side of the county, you are perceived as an agent of your community. I'd like to have somebody else wear that circle, because the thing is, that's what they teach. This is where it's done. It's either work, it should be done there, but it can't be done here. Margaret addressed this. She was talking as our environmental person, and I have worked long on many projects with her, and I asked her a point question here. have we any record or any notice of violations from the CAFOs that we have? And I believe she said no. She's had a number of things reported. And to me, that is a cross-check in and of itself, because the people of this county pay attention. If something offends them or causes suspicion, they have a mechanism to engage or fix it wrong. And I would encourage anybody going forward that that's a great takeaway if you can get that. To me, this is not a question about a factory farm. Thank God I didn't have to hear that. This is about a family wanting to be a take on a business venture in a way that causes people from here a bit of a loss. They've been great row crop people, you've heard that said, and now they want to move in a different direction. That's agriculture, as I understand it. I live in close proximity to a CAFO and I'm wind off of another. Do I smell them? Time to time. That's Iowa as I have lived it. I only hope that, and I asked Scott pointedly on this one, that he applied with his brothers the absolute very best he has to offer every day, because he's right at the doorstep of Nevada. And I'd like to take this one off of this little factoid that I keep hearing kicked around. Two families determine Nevada grows more. And you've heard from both of them today, and I'm not going to call them out. But they have both told when they said they have no interest in selling their farm ground. They are going to continue to farm it, so people will say, well, we can't grow houses to the north. That's not what I've heard in the last week, and they, to me, are, that's where it is, that's where it's likely to be. The beta will grow, and sitting here looking at a developer in a room, and we have been staunched by things outside of our community, and we have tried to address as a board of supervisors and can't get anywhere. The beta is landlocked. But in the sense that behind me is a celebration of economic success that we were all party to. So, when you say that you are expanding, you are virtually doubling a pork processing plant called Bird Marketing in Nevada on the south side, it doesn't surprise me that there would be additional pork production somewhere, and this is proposed to be on the north side. And that's our story. Now, I get it. You don't want to live by these things. I get it. I have been nothing but on the farm. And I know what it is like on the noise side, on the dust side, and on the smell side, but things are better than they used to be. I suspect they will get better in years going forward. I am sorry to the people in the back of the room where you are to all this. I got that story too. I don't know, but I would ask Margaret if she would share, because I keep hearing that the thing that we should do in behalf of Story County is we should deny these applications. And I would ask, what number of counties would we be at that point? How many have gone before us on a voted measure to deny CAFO applications so that it is moved down to the state level? I don't recall running across anything I did on research level. Margaret's giving me a head shake too. Change is not going to come in the City Council of Nevada. Change is not going to come from the Board of Supervisors, no matter how it's configured. You are going to have to get off. You have to move this enthusiasm and this well-articulated belief and move it into a venue that will give you the desired outcome that you seek. And that will happen in the legislature. I shared with my favorite legislature last week on Thursday about this issue as we were about to confront it. I said, you found time to legalize fireworks, but you don't look at the CAFO process. And I thought that was just like, come on, we got to try harder, because we all live here, we all experience things that we can do better. I call balls and strikes up here. I do. I can't let my personal feelings take me so far away from the facts as I find them, that as you are asked to be sworn in, you're liable to say you will uphold the laws of the state of Iowa as you find them. And I do my diligence to find the research to get comfort in the fact that what I get left with is not necessarily what I'd like to choose, but you have to overcome that if you offer yourself up for leadership. So, I would, yeah.
Okay. So, thank you, Maureen. Appreciate what both of you guys had to say. So as has been pointed out a couple of times, I believe really, really strongly that one of government's roles is to help facilitate growth. You can read that as population growth or economic growth or whatever, and I work really, really hard on that. Believe in all things to try to strengthen our economy the right way. I work really, really hard on water quality and soil health issues. I believe that if you're interested in the first two I just named, the future for Iowa is in water quality and soil health. We've got to really work hard on that. And my role, I'm so proud of my role in conservation and trying to make sure that Story County is a front runner in all our conservation practices. Recently, I've gotten really involved in the Iowa Association of Counties. And in fact, now have assumed a leadership role on the statewide Association of County Supervisors Executive Board. And one of the roles that I've assumed is chair of the policy board. And what we do each year is we get together and we write the priorities for the board of supervisors in the state. It's voted on by our entire association, and that goes forward. And one of the things that I was passionate about pushing, and in fact is included in our document, is that it is time for the state to completely review this system, the whole master matrix, the entire system that we go through. I talked to every legislator about, hey, it's been since 2003 since we looked at it. The technology, Scott, I don't have any idea how old you were in 2003, but you've grown. The entire industry has grown. It's time to look at this whole thing. And it's up to the state to do that. And I completely get those of you in the audience who are so justifiably impassioned, whether you're justifiably impassioned because you're afraid this is going to directly impact your life, or you're justifiably impassioned because you fundamentally believe that this is not right for agriculture. It's time for all of us to sit down and try to figure this out, and it starts with the state. And so I'll be down in the state house for 30 to 40 days this year during session, and in every conversation I will mention this. But I also absolutely know that the Henrys are really, really good people trying to do the right thing. I've mentioned that our master matrix system is flawed, but it is our law. And as Marty just mentioned, I will stand right here in a couple weeks on January 2nd, and I will retake the oath of office. And the oath of office is, will you support, part of it is, will you support the laws, support and defend the laws of the state of Iowa? Not the laws you like. Not what you wish they were, but the laws of the state of Iowa. The other thing that was pointed out to us is that we have to go with the consent of the governor, and somehow this majority that we've heard from on this issue should trump the rule of law. And I'm going to tell you right now, for me, it's not even close. I can disagree with the way the law is. But it is absolute law. And the final thing I'll say is, the problem that I have with saying, yes, the Henrys have complied with the law, yes, they qualify, they get the number of points, they've done everything they need to do to qualify the law, but I'm still going to vote it down so that, basically, the Henrys can be a pinata to go down to the state and go through another 30 days of getting beat around the head and neck over this issue when they have absolutely complied with the law. So, where I'm going to come down on this is, I believe strongly that they've achieved not only the required number of points, but they've gone over the required number of points. You can question the system, but they're way above the required number of points. And our law is law, and so I will be voting in support of their application.
I do have a question for the civil attorney. Is it against the law for me to vote now?
Let's be really clear, because this has been pointed out a couple of times. All three of us have the ability to vote to support or deny. And we need to do so that based on whatever it is we decide is driving this. And all, the only point I tried to make is why I'm going to end up where I end up. Ethan, do you have something to add?
So I think I just, to Laura's point, that's absolutely right. Regardless of what the score is, the board has the discretion to vote yes or no.
Yes.
And that recommendation, though, is one of the things they have to make to IVNR. We recommend yes or we recommend no.
Thank you. Okay. Anything further, or we're going to move on to the vote. We're going to do it one at a time. It's going to start with Richland 10. And so you've got to tell me what you're comfortable with. I know where you're going to end up on this. You made it really clear. But for ease of process, are you willing to second the motion and then vote against it, or do you need me to second the motion? You just tell me.
Just as a process, and I understand that for just to be real clarity, a few seconds, and then it's very clear.
Okay, done. Okay, so we're talking about Richland Township 10. Do I have a motion on the construction permit application?
Move consideration of a construction permit application for Richland 10 combined feeding operation as submitted by Montague Board.
And I'll second. Further discussion up here. Chin.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Olson.
No.
Next is section 28.
I would move consideration of a construction permit application for Richland 28, a confined feeding operation as submitted by Longview Corp.
And I'll second. Further discussion up here. Chi.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Olson.
No.
And then 29.
I would move consideration of a construction permit application for Richland 29, a confined feeding operation as submitted by Longview Corp.
And I'll second. Further discussion. Chi.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Olson. All right, so that brings us to the end of that. We're going to try to move through the rest of our agenda really quickly. You guys are welcome to go if you'd like. Next, we don't have additional items. Please be quiet as quiet as possible, I believe. No agency reports, no departmental report, no other report. So we're actually public forum number two. Anybody wishing to address the board on another topic? Seeing no one moving the microphone, ladies, our silence. Morris, do you have anything that's so important that we need to do it at 3:45?
Absolutely not.
Marty, anything that we need to do? And I will do the same. I take a motion to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Okay.